Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish. The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning. Chodesh Tov, how are you doing?
Boker Tov, Chodesh Tov. Yes, before we get into the main meaty bits of what we want to talk about, and just two little things that are on my mind. The first of which is the fact that President Yitzhak Herzog, Isaac Herzog, Buzhi Herzog, as he likes to be called, is in the Ukraine today. And he is visiting Kiev as part of a trip to commemorate 80 years since the Babi Yar massacre, which took place during the German occupation of Ukraine during its campaign against the Soviet Union. 33,771 Jewish citizens, residents of Kiev, were massacred in Babi Yar, which is like a ravine. They say it's in Kiev. I think it's really just near to Kiev, on the outskirts of Kiev. Yeah. Were massacred on the 29th and 30th of September. 2 days, 33,771 souls massacred there when the Jews were rounded up in Kiev and sent to their death there. But let's not stop there, because that ravine, Babi Yar, actually saw between 100 to 150,000 people killed, including all kinds of Soviet prisoners of war, and Ukrainian nationals, and Roma, and communists, and all others at the hands of the Germans. So it's a good thing that our president will be there to remember this particular stain on the Ukrainian nation in general, and of course on humanity, this massive massacre that took place. He will be meeting with the Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, and apparently German President Frank-Walter Steinmeier will also be in attendance at the ceremony. So let's just think about that. I think it's an important thing to remember. 80 years later, we shouldn't forget these incidents. The second thing that's on my mind is this a strike or potential strike by Israel's trainee doctors. And this strike is against the fact that they are required to work shifts of 26 hours. The organization that represents the interns has said this is not okay, and they are looking for shifts to be cut to mere 18 hours at a time rather than 26 hours. Crazy. Now, I've never quite understood why interns have to work 26-hour shifts at a time. This is not unique to Israel. I think we see it all over the world. I don't know if there are any medical people out there who understand this better than I do, but I've never quite understood why we should go to our hospitals and expect to be treated by people who haven't slept for 26 hours. Doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
And I can't understand why we think that that makes them good doctors.
This is something I really don't understand. So now, apparently a whole group of medical interns have actually signed letters of resignation that are due to go into effect, I understand, on Thursday, if the government doesn't actually sign off on this agreement to improve their working conditions. I'm led to understand from what I've read that one of the offers that has been made is that hours will be shortened for 10% of the interns, which means 90% of them will have to continue to work these crazy 26-hour shifts. I don't know. Can someone help me to understand this?
Yeah, what is the point? What do we achieve by this? Absolutely crazy. And staying with things medical, serious cases of COVID-19 in Israel now numbers less than 500.
Yeah, so it looks as if we are now finally getting to the end of the fourth wave in Israel. I think some countries are still waiting for their third wave. We seem to be moving through these things very, very quickly indeed. So a lot of optimism now, you know, and the fact that the serious cases fall below 500 is very important, because obviously it frees up our hospitals, it frees up our medical teams, it frees up all the medical facilities to allow people to treat other illnesses as well. There's a lot of concern as we move into the winter months that there's going to be quite a serious outbreak of flu this year. Many people didn't really get their flu last year because we were wearing masks and we were avoiding each other and we were staying home. And there's an expectation that flu this year is going to be a lot more serious and people being encouraged to get their flu vaccinations sooner rather than later. But at least as far as COVID is concerned, 1,678 new cases were confirmed during the course of yesterday, which is a much, much lower figure, thankfully, than what we've seen up until now. Unfortunately, we have already recorded a total of 7,853 people who have died as a result of COVID during the entire period of this pandemic. We also have statistics about people who have received vaccinations. Almost 40% of the population have received the third dose of the vaccine, which is now available to all people. It's a little bit misleading because the number sounds quite low, bearing in mind that if you haven't had at least 6 months pass since the second vaccination was administered, you're actually not eligible to be vaccinated with the third dose. So those people who have received at least two doses and the second dose is within the last 6 months is still considered to be fully vaccinated, right, according to our measures at the moment. And something like 5.6 million people have been received two vaccinations. So the numbers are going down. The fourth wave seems to be over. When we look at the graph, the fourth wave was actually higher in terms of the number of people who were diagnosed on a daily basis. We see some peaks which are a lot higher than the first, second, and third waves. But the wave also seems to have been a much shorter one. It took shorter to come and go. And again, we're, you know, trying to assess the impact of the vaccines in our society where a lot of people have been vaccinated. The message across the board is keep open, keep operating, don't close down. Don't close the schools, don't close work, don't close the gyms, don't close the restaurants, don't close anything. Keep people working, keep people studying, keep people moving, and get vaccinated and get tested. So now we're even at the stage where even if you've been exposed to somebody with COVID and you know for sure that you've been exposed, you are not necessarily required to go into quarantine. The quarantine has really cost the nation a great deal in economic activity, and there is an attempt to try somehow to limit this whole quarantine thing and to prevent the need for people to go into quarantine. So the message is, if you've been exposed, you don't necessarily have to go into quarantine, providing you're fully vaccinated, and you should test. And we, of course, have the rapid tests that are available, and they can be obtained for free from Magen David Adom and from other sources. Many people are eligible to get those for free. They can also be bought at the pharmacies, but even the rapid tests that you can do at home within a few moments and get the result immediately, those are being very much encouraged. School children, for people going to work and things like that. If you're fully vaccinated and you've tested negative, carry on. To go about your daily business and test again tomorrow. Keep testing for a week if you feel you've been exposed, in order just to make sure that you are not one of those people who's caught it. So this is now the new normal, I would say, in terms of trying to get over this. Is yeah, not
very
to
interesting
lock people up,
changed.
Not to stop.
Mm. And I think the UK have been doing that, haven't they? I don't think they have the same rules either around exposure. So it is fascinating,
right,
to see.
Yeah, because, I mean, we all remember that initially, the moment you've been exposed to something that could even be considered to be remotely possible, then you would have to go to quarantine in order to prevent, of course, yourself from infecting other people. So that was where, you know, a year and a half ago, that was where we were at. Now, the philosophy is a different one. There is much, much more focus on just keeping things rolling and keeping the economy open.
Unbelievable how things keep changing as we get more information and we become more knowledgeable about the circumstances in a particular area, as well as how the virus behaves. Let's talk about Rana Rudd. Apparently there's been new information around this.
Yeah, so we spoke about this yesterday, about the operation that was carried out by the Mossad last month to try somehow to put closure to this issue of the Israeli navigator who fell into enemy hands and who has essentially been missing in action for the last 36 years. More information has come out. First of all, there were some contradictory statements. The prime minister said that the operation that the Mossad carried out was successful. The head of the Mossad, David Barnea, was not quite so optimistic about the success of the operation. I suspect that anything that does not result in Ron Arad or his remains returning home will not be considered to be successful in Mossad terms. I think that that is really the only measure of success. However, some quite interesting things. First of all, questions about why Russia has not been more involved in this Mossad operation, why we didn't consult with Vladimir Putin. We know that Russia were previously involved in bringing home Israeli soldiers who were missing in action. They were successful in helping that. The rumors go that the price that Israel had to pay for that was extremely heavy. We don't really know exactly what the price was and what we had to repay to Russia, but the reports suggest that it did not come for free, and the price that was paid was a very, very heavy one indeed, and that the prime minister might not have been willing to pay a similar price again on this occasion. That is just pure speculation. We don't know that for sure. However, there are stories circulating that DNA has been brought home from a body buried somewhere in a Lebanese village in order to check whether that particular body might well be the remains of Ron Arad. So I don't know how true that is, but there are certainly a number of reports that have suggested that this DNA has been brought home. Ron Arad, of course, does have a daughter who was just a baby when he went missing in action and really doesn't know her father at all. But I guess that there is some DNA that's been lodged somewhere by the military in order to be able to test remains in the event that they might come across them. It's going to be fascinating to know whether that DNA test has been done and what the results of it are. But the other fascinating piece of information that's come out about the story is that apparently an Iranian general was actually kidnapped by the Mossad and then taken across to an unnamed African country somewhere where he was apparently interrogated and then later released. Now, this story is linked, this particular kidnapping or the fact that this Iranian general was kidnapped and questioned is linked to two different things. One, it's linked to this whole Ron Arad operation, and there is suggestion that his interrogation might well have been connected to this operation. The other thing that it's linked to is the other story that we spoke about yesterday, which was the attempt to assassinate Israeli businessmen in Cyprus. And we understand that the Mossad were very much involved in tracking what was going on, which ultimately led to the arrest of that individual in Cyprus, who, as I mentioned yesterday, was traveling backwards and forwards from north to south within Cyprus and was arrested and found to be carrying weapons and was considered and thought to have potentially been an Iranian representative seeking to assassinate Israeli businessmen in Cyprus. And apparently the kidnapping of this Iranian general who was interrogated may well also be linked to that particular story. Lots and lots of intrigue Incredible. Going on at the moment with these particular stories.
Absolutely unbelievable. We don't have a lot of time, but I wanted to ask you about the government enlisting the IDF and the security services to try and stem a wave of violent crime in the Arab sector in Israel.
Yeah, so this is a very, very controversial issue. What's going on in the Arab sector right now in Israel in general is very, very unfortunate. 100 people have been murdered within the Arab sector in Israel during this current year, 2021. And this is considered to be a very, very high rate of crime. The murders seem to center around family feuds and around violent crime that goes on within the Arab sector, driven by criminal gangs in the most part, extortion, things like that, that seem to be quite rife within the Arab sector. And of course, the operation of Israel's security, whether it be the police force, policing general criminal activities on the street, or whether it be potentially the Shin Bet, the Internal Security Service, or other, even the IDF, is highly controversial. And if this is deployed within those Arab communities, it might be like a red rag to a bull. It might be highly controversial. But Prime Minister Naftali Bennett has said that he is very determined to crack down on this wave of crime, to prevent further murders within the Arab sect in Israel, even though they do happen to be a minority within our country. And the way that they operate in their culture is slightly different from the way that we like to operate and the way that our culture allows things to happen. But our security services do have a responsibility to allow citizens in Arab cities, towns, villages around Israel to live in peace and in peace and security. And for that, we're going to potentially need to deploy the IDF and the Shin Bet in order to crack down on this crime wave.